Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have one of my favorite people back. This is a guest who's been with us multiple times, and every time she comes on, it's a wealth of information, a reality check, and more importantly, a call to action. I don't think you can make conscious decisions if you don't know what's going on. And this is a time that you need to have discernment, where you need to know what's going on so you can protect yourself and your family, and specifically your children. Today, we're going to talk with Miss Lynn Taylor. She's the Common Core Diva, and she's just a blessing to the show and to me as a friend. And today, we're going to do a little bit of a deep dive. I was always curious as to know about our education system. Again, I think you and I, Lynn, had a unique, or maybe it wasn't unique, it was the time that we were educated. And it's not the same. And it pains me that there's like a black and white versus technicolor in terms of children being able to be who they are, to freely seek knowledge, and to not be somehow boxed in some sort of situation that puts them at a disadvantage. So I wanted to talk about our education system in a more broader term. You're an educator. You know, let's go back to the beginning. Why did you want to become a teacher? Because I think it really does come down to that. Because I still remember my first grade teacher, and I always have good memories of my education.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Elena. And one of the reasons why I wanted to teach was because, first of all, let me take you back to when I was probably 12, 13, somewhere in there. Anyway, I finally had gotten my own room. And in my own room, I had this one metal cabinet that served as part of my closet. And there was part of it that the metal had worn down just enough I could make a chalkboard. And so I would line all my stuffed animals up, and I would go through whatever it was I was going through, and I would write it down on the chalkboard, and, you know, I just would pretend. And then fast forward, life happened, and, you know, things didn't go the way that I thought they would, and I missed out on that. And then it was like, well, And then I started having children, and it was like, hey, you know what? I can teach. I can teach my kids. And so I felt like it was more of a call, but it was also a throwback to something that had already been instilled in me at a young age. And it was such a tough thing to do, because instead of teaching other people's children, which I eventually did, I started off with my own. And if you ever want to talk about trying to shift hats between wife, mom, and teacher, there you go. And so it was always... But it was always a labor of love, and it was because I wanted not only my children, but the ones that I went on to teach who weren't my children, but it was I wanted to instill in them a love to continually seek knowledge, to know that no matter how old you get, there's always going to be something that you can learn from someone when you have the right attitude. Now, if you have a pious attitude where, oh, I think I know everything, I don't need to learn from someone, then you're not going to have as an enriched life as someone who is like, I didn't know that. Let's talk about that.
I think it does come down to being brave and I think honest enough to admit you don't know something, but to want to pursue it. It doesn't seem like that's the way things are now. If you don't know, or basically if you do know something and it's against the grain, it's put a kibosh on it so that it can't be sent out, or everybody can't enrich themselves because of some sort of narrative. You know, when you went into the education system as a teacher, did you find that you had free rein to teach your children the way you were taught, right? It's about pursuit of knowledge, whether you get it right or wrong. It's the pursuit of it, the critical thinking that goes into play. And if you might not get it right, but you have the tools to expand and to get it right next time. Was there a difference in how the education system allowed teachers to be teachers?
Well, absolutely. And yes, you had a lot of freedom, a lot more than you have now. And we could pretty much say anything or bring up any topic as long as it was done in the discourse, as long as it was done in an appropriate manner, as long as it was done where it wasn't about you, it was about the knowledge that was out there. So you couldn't tout off personal belief statements and then teach that as the class mantra, or you couldn't sit there and bring in your political ideology, because that was just absolutely wrong, because then you would be guiding the students not in what was supposed to be the lesson, but in what you thought was supposed to be what they needed. And a lot of times that would go against the grain, because first of all, it wasn't in the goal that were for the educational system. You know, I can think back to where we didn't have the agendas that we have now in our education. And I think it's a crying shame, because with those agendas, you are so boxed into what you can teach and what you cannot teach, that what the students actually get to learn is far less than what they could ever have gotten before.
So, I mean, from the goals of teaching, was it, did the goals of teaching change? So my question, to expand on it, was it really about the pursuit of knowledge like you described before? And did it change to teaching for a skill, or teaching to be this part of society, right? It's teaching for an endpoint, as opposed to letting someone be free and find their own endpoint.
Right. Yes, it was more open-ended. And then somewhere along the line, someone got the bright idea, oh, well, no, we can't have success that way. No, we have to pigeonhole it. No, we have to compartmentalize everything. We have to start saying that, no, you cannot come to the classroom with your own attitudes, values, and beliefs. No, we're going to sit here and we're going to predetermine what your attitudes, values, and beliefs will be. And if you don't fit into that, well, then you're not going to succeed. So it's kind of like you're teaching to an agenda, but you're also teaching to a test. And that was never the point of a true education. You were supposed to be able to think on your own, not just blankly throw out rote information. And that's what we're seeing happen. And we're seeing students now, Dr. Elena, who can't even get that correct. I mean, just today I was on an interview where I had someone comment that, look, they went to the emergency room and the emergency room personnel didn't even know how to do one of the procedures that they needed to do. So the person who was injured is talking this person through how to do what it is they should have already learned. So when you have medical people or you have other people in key positions who don't know how to do their job, how are we going to be able to survive as a society? And you and I have talked about this I don't know how many times.
Yeah, that's tragic. So you're talking about extrapolating this deficit, not just in grade school, high school. We're talking about professional life now. Whoever's in, you know, they've graduated. They didn't know how to do something from a medical standpoint. You know, this is something that's concerning, because once you lose that skill and you can't pass it on to the next generation of doctors, lawyers, teachers, that skill is gone. That's tragic. And I don't even know what to say about that.
Well, I was going to ask you, since you went to medical school, if you had dared gone to one of your professors and said, okay, I don't know how to do this procedure, what would have happened?
Well, I mean, if the whole thing about medicine, it's about teaching, right? So you don't know anything when you're a freshman, or I should say an intern. And the motto was see one, do one, teach one. So you were guided through, you're expected to pick it up. If you didn't, you know, they would go through it as many times as they needed to until you could get it. And then you would never go to the next level unless you mastered the one before that. So someone got passed through, it seems, from medical school through residency, through training, and still didn't, I don't even know how that's even possible to advance without having the basics. So it seems like they're just social promotion now seems to have gone through professional schools and professional life, and you should be very wary. And it's now time for people to ask questions. And if they don't feel comfortable about any situation, withdraw your consent. That's the safest thing to say.
Okay, very good. You know, because I would think as a medical professional that you would know, okay, if I'm going to have myself in the ER, I'm going to need to know everything there mm-hmm. is to know. And you would not dare put yourself in that ER if you were less than that. But I know that there are people now who don't have those kinds of principles mm-hmm. and foundations, and they're just looking at it, well, it's a paycheck. And, you know, if I show up and I hit a button or if I switch or this or that, then I've done my job. And that's because we've shifted so much into technology. And that is not education. That is absolutely not education. That is something that you could train a monkey to do.
That's true. So what's the, you know, if you think about meritocracy in itself, it's just distill it down to the best rise and those that need help get the help so they can achieve. That doesn't seem to be what's going on now. I don't know if you read this article, there's a fire department who got chastised because they wanted their fire crew to be able to learn how to fight fires. And that was frowned upon. I think they fired the chief. You know, the whole purpose of being a fire person or firefighter is to be able to know what you're doing. And that right. was somehow not right. It was somehow, you know, degrading somebody. But honestly, would you ever want to put you have a job that puts life and death in your hands. You must have complete, I don't even know what to say, out to lunch to put yourself in that position and be in a position where you can hurt somebody and you don't care. I don't understand that. But it
no,
seems
I don't
to,
either yeah. because you know, depending on what state you are, your fire department might be just in charge of fire, or they might be also part of the first responder
exactly.
team, and they don't know what they're going to find when they get to the person's home. I mean, where I live in North Carolina, that is precisely what happens. The fire department is always the first one to show up, and they have no idea, is it truly a fire? Is it a medical emergency? What is it that we're going to be facing? Now, I can tell you that I know in other states, the fire department does precisely that. They are to put out fires and save lives. Then there's another department that will come in and do the first responder. So it depends. But either way, you're absolutely spot on. You should know what it takes and what it means to be that firefighter, to be that first responder, to be that teacher. And when you have a system that has so grounded down into, okay, you're going to only be able to teach 2 inches wide worth of a box, and then you're only going to be able to fill it with what we tell you. You mm-hmm. cannot fill that box with what you know those students need.
You know, from the standpoint of a foundation, I don't really have words for it. To see a foundation of education, which is, I would think, the foundation of our society, be completely upended and disrupted with no regard, really, for the consequences. It's like, just do it, whatever the consequences are, whatever. But this is huge. We're talking about the life, the safety, the health, and the future of every single man, woman, and child in the country. It doesn't matter what you look like, whatever. Everybody is in the same boat with this. I don't understand why people can't see that.
I think they're too blinded with the flavor of the month, whatever flavor that may be. I really do, because we have seen education, instead of being that basic set of knowledge and skills, okay, facts and academics and all that sort of thing, we've seen it become a political hotbed or a social issue hotbed. You know, you mm-hmm. don't go to school to learn social studies. You go to learn social justice. Mm-hmm. You don't go to learn math. You go to learn why math is so oppressive to certain individuals. You see the difference?
Yeah. It's a change in the energy. It's a change in the intention. But it seems to be that it either makes you feel poorly about yourself, it makes it okay to be, to strive to be mediocre, and there's no pride. You know, if you don't, I used to want to be the best in school, not just get over. But if that's the case, and if that's what people are feeling, I can understand now why we're in this circle, this cycle of really mediocrity, and now depending on something like artificial intelligence to take over, because we don't know anything. I mean, just imagine, remember going to writing a paper and having to go to the library and do note cards and do your bibliography, all the things that you'd have to do. I don't think the kids even know what that is anymore, do you?
I really don't. And, you know, all you have to do is pick up your phone today. And, you know, if you have one that has the capability to search the internet, type in anything you want. The first thing that will pop up is an AI-generated response. Yep. Whether you ask for it or whether you don't, it is there. And I don't want the artificial intelligent answer. I want to find out the information for myself, because there is some sort of, okay, since I'm a researcher, there is some sort of enjoyment and satisfaction out of digging to find out information. And if I am negated that joy and that satisfaction, then I don't feel I've done a good job. And this is what AI robs you of on every single level. But we also need to understand that education, again, as that social issue pulpit, has now taken in things into education that it had no business taking in. Things like sex education. That was supposed to be up to mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Mom and dad were supposed to tell you about the birds and the bees. And if mom and dad didn't do it, then, you know, some trusted family member was supposed to do that. No. Now the school not only believes that it's their business, they will go as far as to say, well, when your child steps onto the school ground, you are no longer the person in charge. We are, and we will teach your child A, B, C, and D. And the thing about it is that this kind of stuff has permeated every single subject. Whether it applies or whether it doesn't matter to the agenda. What matters is, we've got Johnny and Susie, we've got them in this school environment, and this is what we're going to shove down their throat. Now, that's just one example. It could also be any of the other things that we've talked about as well. Skill-based education over academics, you know. Okay, what does that mean? That means that you master a skill, you know how to do something with your hands, whether your brain understands it or not. Now, as you know, cognitive skill needs to be mastered before the hand skill needs to be mastered. If you don't understand what you're doing, then you're not going to do it, or if you're not going to do it very well.
Mm-hmm. Makes perfect sense. On that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with the Common Core Diva, Miss Lynn Taylor. And you can go to her website, commoncorediva.com. That's correct, right, Lynn?
Yes, ma'am.
Excellent. So we've got a really good foundation on what education was, what it's supposed to be, and what it's not. And let's go into more specifics. I've never heard of this, but what is the B3 Brain Body Behavior Curriculum?
Oh, you're going to love this, Dr. Elena. You are just going to, I tell you what, you're going to be falling over. You really, really are. This is a curriculum set that starts at $179 a kit, and the prices go up, and you'll get an instructor guide, four sets of task cards that focus on balance and flexibility, cardiovascular strength, endurance, muscular strength, and sports training. Well, now that doesn't sound so bad, does it?
No.
Until you look at who produces the curriculum, it is an entity known as ETR, which stands for Education, Training, and Resources. Now, I wrote about this particular entity back in 2020. And this was having to do with how physical education was being turned into not so much the physical part or even the education part. It was, okay, we're going to use PE to bring about the whole child model, where the whole child involves the brain, the body, and the behavior. And we're going to call it different names, and we're going to align it to Common Core. Then we're not happy with that. So now we're going to take it, we're going to put it into international standards that married to the United Nations. And so this particular article, and I would invite your listeners to look this one up. This is an Educratic Beanstalk, and I published it on February 24th of 2020, and that's on my website, commoncorediva.com. Now, I'm not going to go through every single thing that I wrote in that particular article, because it is absolutely mind-boggling what was passed off as education. But this is what I wanted to read to you from this particular article about ETR, which is Education, Training, and Research. Okay, they are not tied in with some of the, well, they actually are, but when I wrote this, they weren't particularly tied in with a certain other entity. But they do describe themselves as a behavioral health organization. All right. That means they're going to tie in sexuality. Ooh, okay. Well, how does that go into the United Nations? Well, through education, which is sustainable development goal number 4, jobs, which is number 8, and this also aligns with the Every Student Succeeds Act, because it mandated that all education had to be aligned to workforce-based standards. Now, here's another thing about ETR. They fully support school-based health clinics and programs. Well, how does that tie to physical education? Well, Every Student Succeeds Act did mandate for more school-based health care. Now, Douglas Kirby, he was a doctor, was a senior research scientist for ETR, and he is considered to this day, Dr. Elena, a pillar in adolescent sexual and reproductive health. So some of the school-based health care ties goes into this. And ETR also has the full support of the Centers for Disease Control. Now, this is what is so damning about Dr. Kirby. He has served as a scientific advisor to the CDC, the USAID, which is in the State Department, the World Health Organization, the UNFPA, the UNESCO, the National Campaign to Prevent Teen and Unplanned Pregnancy. Well, that doesn't sound so bad, does it? Only until you get to the American Journal on Public Health, where the particular issue that I linked in this particular article cited Dr. Kirby 19 times. The data collection for sexual activity began on page 5, and you will find that he was tied to the Kinsey Institute on page 9. Now, if no one knows who Dr. Kinsey was, he was the absolute freakish pedophile who reinvented what stood for sex and sexuality. He was the one who championed studies that said, oh yes, babies could have orgasms. What he did was he and his twisted staff manipulated and harmed children through child abuse experiments to come up with this false narrative, which went on to change our penal system thanks to the Rockefeller Foundation and their money.
So
now that is behind the brain behavior and the brain, body, and behavior. So just think, when it sounds about balance and flexibility and cardiovascular and all that kind of stuff. Let me give you an example. Okay, we have an example here from their brain, body, and behavior. This is called foot juggle. Now I want you to imagine a child standing on one foot trying to bounce a balloon on the other foot. Strike a balloon or beach ball with your feet to keep the object off the floor and use your head to keep the object in the air. Can you stay within the designated area? And how many touches did you get on this ball or balloon before it hit the ground? Now, here's the underlying lesson. Never give up, never stop believing. Now, Dr. Elena, as a blanket statement, those aren't bad. But what else is the curriculum teaching? With a background what I just read you, what do you think they're going to teach the children to believe? Let's go to another example. This one, body part balance. Balance a beanbag on your head, neck, shoulder, arm, elbow, foot, knee, forehead, belly, finger, ear, and back. Was I able to balance it on all my body parts? Okay, here's the lesson. The body achieves what the mind believes. Okay, what are they pumping into the child's mind to believe? Mm-hmm. These are the unspoken lessons. Okay, mm-hmm. Here we have tower build. Start in a push-up position with your arms fully extended, using plastic cups to build up and take down a tower, and repeat this as many times as you can. How many towers was I able to build? And the lesson here is quality over quantity. Again, what concept are we applying this to? Are we saying quality education over how many lessons, or are we going somewhere even darker? Last one I have for you, roll the die. Roll the die inside a hula hoop. Travel around the hula hoop three times after each roll, performing the following movements: hopping, skipping, jumping, walking, galloping, and jogging. Which exercise was more challenging for me? And here's the underlying lesson. Decide, commit, succeed. Okay. The reason that B3 was even created was because the people at ETR, as well as other esteemed colleagues, got together with other people and said, you know what? We're noticing that because Johnny and Susie are so tied to the computer that they're just not getting enough physical activity. So we're going to get physical activity back in their lives, and we're going to put these coached lessons in on top of it. You also have ones that It was designed to go after kids who fidget, wiggle, and it's all due to too much tech. Now, you're starting this in preschool. You're going to have children, due to their age, fidget and wiggle anyway, because they're little bodies, and little bodies need to move. Little bodies don't need to sit 5 hours a day at nauseam. They just don't. But this is what is going on. And the whole goal is to spark the brain, build the body, and improve the behavior. But when you're only doing these lessons, scant hours, not even a full hour a day, how are you really going to justify that you've sparked the brain and built the body? Because each of these activities take almost no time to do. Now, targets kindergarten through, I said preschool, I'm wrong. It's kindergarten through sixth grade. And it focuses in on their fundamental motor skills by using teachers and educational professionals. And the educational professional is left nondescript on purpose, because in the way that these school-based health clinics are going, you can have doctors and psychiatrists, you can have physician's assistants, you can have nurses, you can have social workers, you can have, you name it, from the government system in as an educational professional.
And they have the nerve to try to palm this off as physical education too, as if it's phys ed. Am I reading that correct?
It's part of their physical education. It's not all of it. It's crazy. Really isn't. Now, I wanted to point out to you that the funding for this, it's a mix of public-private partnerships, especially the federal government and your school district. Remember, the kits start at $179. Now, any of those activities that I just read to you don't cost $179. In fact, you can check out a book from the library, or go to a teacher like myself who has old books on her shelf and say, hey, I need some ideas for physical movement. I need some ideas for fun to stimulate brains. And I could do it for free. You don't need to spend money.
Follow the money. Someone's making money on this. Whatever this is, I can't imagine as a child sitting in a chair, even if you're looking at a computer, for, you know, whatever the time is that they're spending in school, and not move, not get out, get some sun, sweat, do whatever you need to do to expand, you know, expound, or I should say, release your energy. So talk about fidgeting. On that note, let's take our second break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor, and I can't, as I said before the break, sitting in a chair, staring at a computer screen, and not having any physical activity, but this, whatever this is called, it sounds ridiculous to me. But it's, I don't even know what to say. You're starting with a young child. They don't even have any frame of reference. So at some right. point, this is all they know as... Mm-hmm. It's cruel and unusual, quite frankly.
Well, here's what concerns me. You're taking a kindergarten child and you're taking an entity that is more focused on sexuality than it is physical health.
Yeah.
And you're going to instill in them. What is it you're instilling in them? Because I'm going to tell you what, in kindergarten, you don't know your belly button from a hole in the ground, much less what body part does what. And this is what should be so concerning. Now, you did ask if it was going to take over PE, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you the image that I put into this particular article that I was reading to you from the EduCredit Beanstalk on my website. Here are some of the people who are behind what's going on or being passed as PE. Shape America, Spark, which is U.S. and internationally benchmarked, Playworks, United Way, the Anti-Defamation League, IDEO Labs, which is Classroom Roulette app and digital badges. You also have CASEL, which is the Consortium for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, Strive Together, Alliance for a Healthier Generation, America's Promise Alliance, Active Schools, Action for Healthy Kids, the Aspen Institute, the National Commission for Social Emotional Learning and Academic Development, the Boys and Girls Club of America, Centervention, the CDC, EduPath, the Greater Good Science Center out of University of California at Berkeley, Good Sports, Transforming Ed, the National Network for State Teachers of the Year, and finally, the School-Based Health Alliance. Every one of these in this, that I just read to you is the image that I put into this particular article will tie back to the U.S. Department of either Health and Human Services, the data tracking arms, the United Nations, or any other entity that is connected in between.
It's a lot of groups that have a dog in this hunt, and they're all tied to
right.
behavior, right? To having creating citizens
right.
who are compliant and who don't know that there's another aspect to being human, quite frankly, and being joyful.
Right.
There's no joy in any of this. I don't understand how a child
right.
can be expected to sit at a computer and not move around. So my next question is a segue, because this is about health as well. You know, ADHD has
right.
become one of those diagnoses that didn't exist when I was a kid. You know, we got N for needs improvement or U for talking in class because it was boring. But this is different.
Right.
This is a different day and age now. You can get diagnosed with ADHD for your attention not being able to follow and sit still long enough to do whatever this is for as long as they want you to.
Right.
So do you foresee that there's going to be a diagnosis coming out for those children who really just want to go out and play? I mean, is this going to be something that tags them in some way?
Well, I would absolutely think so. I mean, if you stop and think about it, I can remember being in grade school where somebody got the bright idea, we're going to paint the windows and we're going to paint them a color that nobody can see out the window. Because we have kids who are staring out the window. They're not paying attention. Well, what they didn't understand is that some people need sunshine. Some people need that light. Some students need that break to just take 2 seconds to look out and see the trees or the birds or the whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So you can bet your bottom dollar that this is going to create all kinds of habits, as well as some of the other things that we've talked about that are outside of this B3 curriculum. I mean, the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services just published earlier this month, the Medicaid and CHIP beneficiaries attention deficit hyperactivity disorder information. And it goes on to tell you that of the parent reported prevalence of ADHD among the children, that they're finding all these significant numbers. And oh my goodness, we have to do something. Now here's how the information starts off with. Approximately 13% of children ages 3 to 17 with public insurance have ADHD, as reported by their parents. The early and periodic screening, diagnostic, and treatment benefit requires that all eligible children enrolled in Medicaid and at the state option, children enrolled in the Children's Health Insurance Program, or CHIP, receive these screenings. Now, I want to stop right there because you might have someone who goes, well, I'm not in either one of those programs. I'm not on Medicaid, and I'm not my child's not in the CHIP program. When the Every Student Succeeds Act went and shifted the Title I funding from per pupil to whole school, whether you're on these programs or not, your child will be universally screened by these early and periodic diagnostic tests. I kid you not. Go look at your schools. Go find out exactly how much money they're getting from not only the Department of Education, but the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, what in the world would be our difference if this was school reported, not parent reported? Because the school, under the Title I funding, can screen your child with or without your permission. And this is how the schools are being allowed to double dip into Medicaid, because they've been able to label Johnny and Susie as ADHD or whatever other behavioral problem you can have out there. Then they'll rush in with things like the B3 and all these others. Oh, here's part of an intervention, and oh, here's the medicine, and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, maybe your child needs it, maybe your child doesn't, but you're not given a chance to even find out because the school has said, nope, this is what we're doing. Now, I wanted to point out to you that ADHD is one of the most common neurodevelopmental disorders of childhood. It is usually first diagnosed in childhood and often lasts into adulthood. That's why we have a group called CHAD that stands for Children and Adults with ADHD. So the government has covered their backs. You cannot believe how well they've covered their backside when it comes to something such as this. And we know that if you look at the diagnostic, the DSM-5, it will tell you, okay, here's what ADHD is. Now, see if this sounds like some of what we just had on the B3. Let's see here. Appears to be in constant motion. Frequently fidgets or moves in his or her seat. Becomes restless during quiet activities, leaves his or her seat when expected to remain seated, interrupt others in classroom activities, talks excessively, and or fails to follow classroom procedures.
It's very vague, and it sounds like any little, adolescent or child. That's what they do. I mean, this is taking normal child behavior and making it into some sort of ailment or disease.
It exactly is. And here's the thing. The government, under this particular report that I'm citing for you, says here any co-occurring condition is going to be as high as 92%, especially under public insurance.
What?
What is that telling us? What is that telling us? Is our public insurance being honest and truthful?
That's putting a whole group of children based on, in one way, economics, if you really want to, you know, put it out there, mm-hmm. that they're going to be classed and put into a separate category as potentially an underclass. If you can't educate them, they have to be medicated. There's consequences to putting giving children medication. They're still developing. I don't think we still know what these ADHD drugs do to children long term, because it's kind of relatively new.
Well, it's awful.
Yeah,
it really is. And under this particular guide that the CMS has put out, Recommended treatment for children, Dr. Elena, with ADHD includes medication and behavior therapy, including training for your parents in the behavioral management of ADHD. Now, I'm going to tell you, the mandated behavior techniques for some of these children that's taken home to families, it doesn't work well because maybe the parents don't understand English, or maybe they say, hey, we've been dealing with this longer than you have school. We know what we're doing. We can do it this way. No, because it doesn't fit that Medicaid standard or qualification. Nope, you have to do it the government's way. This is taking parenting out of the parents' hands and putting it into the government's hands.
Well, let's take our last break because I want to ask, preview the question of, what if the parents say no? So let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. And Lynn, how can people follow you and listen to your various interviews? I'm sure you have them on your website, right?
Yes, I do. My webmaster is really good about putting all my interviews up there, so you can just search by subject if you want. It's commoncorediva.com, and I want to correct something that I spoke during our last break. I read to you from the wrong document what ADHD is under the DSM-5. That was under what I was reading to you from, and I do apologize about this, was the classroom interventions that have been put together by higher education and then passed off to lower education. So let me correct that very quickly before we go to your next question, please. Under the DSM-5, this is what it says. It is a disorder that is usually diagnosed in infancy, childhood, and adolescence. It is a persistent pattern of inattention and or hyperactivity impulsivity. Inattention, you have to have 6 symptoms or more for at least 6 months to be diagnosed with ADHD. It also can manifest in other behaviors like defiance, hostility, failure to understand tasks or instructions. Now, if I'm having a bad day, Dr. Elena, and I just don't want to listen, I'm going to be labeled a problem because I'm being defiant. Mm-hmm. And maybe I deserve to be labeled defiant, maybe I don't. But the point of it is under this draconian measure of diagnostic, it's not going to matter if I'm defiant one day or 50 days. They're going to classify me as being a problem. And if I keep doing it long enough, they're going to stick me on one of these interventions.
So is it the teacher? Who's the person? I mean, the teacher has to be, I would think, the front line of dealing with the child and making these assessments. Am I right?
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that as a teacher, I would never on God's green earth ever participate in one of these things because it's taking a job that I'm not qualified mm-hmm. for, and it's putting it on my shoulders. Unless you have a teacher who has been trained in the medical profession and has a doctor behind their name, no teacher should have to do this. But teachers are being put in the position of, you got to assess Johnny and Susie, and here's the assessment with which you do it. And depending on how Johnny and Susie answer this assessment, is going to put them in whatever behavior intervention program that the school is going through. Now, this particular intervention stuff that I'm reading to you is from the College of William and Mary. And it's classroom interventions for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And it does cover their butt by saying considerations. Okay, so here we go. It tells you here that in order for a student to be diagnosed with ADHD, symptoms must appear before age 12 and be exhibited in at least 2 settings. This will have adverse effects on their academic performance and their social and emotional development. Well, again, the school is not supposed to be measuring social and emotional development. That's what your pediatrician is supposed to be doing. That is what your medical doctor is supposed to be doing, is measuring those sorts of things. Then it goes on to tell you, oh, well, we'll have school-based interventions that include team approach across multiple settings with both preventative and intervention strategies. In other words, we're going to talk so wide and so vague about this, Dr. Elena, that you're really not going to understand what they're going to do to your child, other than it's going to be a team-wide approach, and they're going to come at you from every single angle. It also will use data, because it will track the child's information as far as their strengths and what they need to work on. And then it goes on to tell you the first step in creating classroom support for a student with ADHD is understanding their strengths and their needs. This involves not only formal, which would be in school, but informal, which would mean at home. And in both places, Dr. Elena, your child is going to be tested and assessed. Now, how many children do you know that have gone to school and they've had testing all day, and they come home, hey mom, hey dad, and then they have to look forward to more testing? What child is going to say, sign me up?
None. So my question now has to be, with this grid that's being created, what if the parent says no? What if they say, I don't want my child to be assessed. I don't believe what you're telling me. I'm not buying it. What is there a consequence for a parent being a parent?
Well, in some cases, and I can think of a few that have popped off my head right away, if you refuse these sorts of things, then social services from the county or the state gets involved. And typically what happens is that you have the child removed from your home because you're an unfit parent.
With no recourse, without any assessment of the home, just based on this crazy assessment.
Based on the fact that you exercised your parental right to say no. And if you think that's an extreme example, for some states it would be, but for here in North Carolina, it absolutely is not. I have a personal friend who has had this happen to her family. It ripped her family apart because they did not one thing wrong, but both children were removed and put into foster care. And it took a fight like you would not believe to be able to reunite that family. Now, that doesn't count all the damage that was done in the meantime.
Is there any escape by being a homeschooling family?
You would need to be very careful of what services you partake of if you're a homeschooling family, because if you are taking advantage of any county funded program for special needs or independent education plans or academic supports or things like that, you too could be setting your family up for an emotional train wreck with this. You absolutely could. And if someone in those programs detects that there might be a behavioral problem with your child, you bet your sweet Bippy they're going to try to intervene. Because after all, you as the homeschool parent are dumber than a box of rocks, and you didn't know this was going on. Well, you know what? I happen to know a lot of those kind of people, too, they are very much up on what is going on with their child, and they have it better handled than any government system could ever do. And you want to know why? Because short of God, those parents are the ones who know that child better than any body, including their overworked teacher.
Now, you've mentioned, you know, the template for this is for children in the public school system, it seems. What about if you're in a magnet school, if you're in a private school setting, parochial school, are you still going to be subject to this?
Absolutely. Especially if they take any sort of federal funding. Now, here's what I want you to understand. This goes into all kinds of things for organization or limiting what they do, including their breaks. It gives you all kinds of information about, oh, we're going to set up peer tutoring for you. We're going to give you co-op settings. We're going to give you group settings. We're going to set up all kinds of computer-based gaming for you. Oh, really? Like computer-based learning is really going to solve this? It absolutely is not going to. This particular consideration kit is an absolute insult to any educator or, frankly, any parent. Because, again, you should be working with your healthcare professional because the healthcare professional knows your child's personal information. They know when the child was born, how much the child weighs. They know the developmental benchmarks. They know so much, but so much of this is being taken out of their hands and inserted into a school environment where you may have qualified people or you may not.
Well, this is a system that is rewarded. I mean, it's money involved with this, right? So the more children you have this in assessment, the more money that the school, is it the school district? Is it the school itself? Who's getting the money for this? Both. Oh, man.
It's both. It absolutely is. Remember, under the Title I recalculations with the Every Student Succeeds Act, schools were qualified to become quasi-federally recognized health centers, therefore being able to receive Medicaid, Medicare money.
Is there any pushback that you know of from the teaching union? I would think that the teachers' unions itself must feel like we're being asked to do things that we're not trained to do, therefore we're against it. Is there any pushback from that level?
I have heard pushback from teachers' unions on everything but. Now, I would task the parent or the listener, go look at the teachers' unions. Is any of this on their radar? And if it's not, why not? I do know that teachers unions do really want more pay because they say, hey, we're having to do not only the teaching job, we're now having to do the behavioral intervention job, we're having to do the doctor job, we're having to do this, that, and the other. And who could blame them? I mean, when you're doing that many jobs and you're not getting paid for it. But let's stop and think about the stay-at-home parent. If you look at the money that would need to be made by any household that has a stay-at-home parent, they couldn't afford what that family is doing if they had to pay out. But yet somehow that family is making it work. And you want to know why? Because they're dedicated to keeping their family together and healthy. They're not relying on every government program out there that could possibly exist or a school system that is so corrupt that it is not even funny. And those are the parents that we need to be protecting. Those are the parents we need to say, you know what, we're in your corner. And those are the types of parents that we need to introduce to others' parents so that those parents who are still in the dark, are still stuck in this system, can see that, hey, there is light at the tunnel.
I think that's a really good place to stop because, it's a call to action. And you don't have to just sit back and let this happen to you, your family, your child. I mean, the parents, ultimately, just like the healthcare system, is for the patient. The education system is supposed to be for the parent and the child. And that power has been taken from them. But I think if people can see it and stand up for themselves, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this could be stopped if people are aware of it and make a statement against it and stand up against it.
Oh, absolutely. And you would need to start with your local government. You would then need to go to your state and say, you know what, if we could live within our means and divorce ourselves from all the federal money that's coming down through every stupid funding stream that's possible at education and saying it's somehow relevant, we'd be a heck of a lot better off.
I couldn't have said it better. Lynn, thank you so much again for your time. This is information that unless you're really, really paying attention, you really wouldn't know. You're just trying to make ends meet, keep your family fed, pay your mortgage or your rent, And this is happening parallel, but we can't afford anybody at this point to just let people take care of us. It's about us taking our power back. I think that's the best message that you can give in this interview.
Absolutely. I could not agree more, my dear.
So once again, Lynn, in the seconds we have, how can people listen to your podcasts, you know, your interviews, and read what you write?
CommonCoreDiva.com. If you would like to schedule me to speak to your group, you would email me at info@CommonCoreDiva.com, and we can work out logistics from there.
Lynn, I love you. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, and love you too.
Take care now. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.